Good morning. It's the show on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Mark Brody with Phil Lantzman and Jorge Valencia.
Last week, we revisited our ongoing conversation about Islam and about terrorism attacks. That was after the vehicular attack in New York City. Our guest was the president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, and he was calling for a reform on Islam. But it turns out this is actually a very controversial proposal for Muslims. With us today is Imran Siddiqui. He is the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Arizona. Good morning, Imran. So let's start out with our interview with Dr. Jasser last week. What do you think of this proposal of reforming Islam?
I think you're taking the actions of a few individuals, people who are misguided. You're utilizing what happened in New York, a horrific tragedy. It was a horrific attack, and there's definitely an issue with people being radicalized. However, at the same time, when we have a mass shooting like we had day before yesterday in Texas, for example, we're not saying the religion of Christianity or white males need to be reformed. We're only saying that under the lens of Islam and Muslims. Now, there are people who are misguided who happen to be Muslim. Like you have the 9/11 hijackers, you have people who commit acts of terror, people who are perverting the name of Islam. And so individuals need to be reformed. It's an educational issue. And you can look back. You can look back at a lot
of... And Islam is a very, very large religion.
With
many branches.
Yeah, 1.5, 1.6 billion people worldwide. Mm-hmm. And so you can't go over an entire religion that takes up, up to 25% of the world's population saying that this entire religion needs to be reformed. Institutions may need to be reformed that are spreading knowledge and those types of things. But in terms of the religion, I mean, far and wide, the Muslim community believes Islam is in and of itself a perfect manifestation of its religion. However, we need to improve ourselves, educate ourselves, and learn more about our faith.
I wanted to ask you a question that we asked Dr. Jasser last week. Do people who are Muslim here in Arizona, whom you're in touch with, do you feel the need to issue a condemnation after an attack in which the perpetrator is Muslim?
I think that has become the knee-jerk reaction of a lot of folks. We've seen that over the past 15, 16 years that I've been writing and doing this type of work. Anytime somebody who is Muslim or perceived to be Muslim does something heinous, first of all, it gets...
So it's kind of unfair to ask that, right?
It is. I mean, because first of all, like we're not allowed to be part of the grieving process. I mean, when I saw what happened in New York City, like my thoughts were with the individuals who were run down. Like, this is horrible. This is like, what if this was my family? What if this was my children that were targeted here? And same thing when this happened in Texas, where the youngest victim was 17 months old and up to 77 years old, where we've been conditioned as a society to just ask these questions. And really, it's dehumanizing us, and we're just, it's a knee-jerk reaction. However, and it's not applied the same across the board. So when Robert Deere walks into an abortion clinic in Colorado and sprays bullets, we don't ask evangelical Christians to condemn those acts. When this guy walks into the church in New Sutherland, Texas, we don't ask those same questions. And we shouldn't ask those questions. It's an absurdity. Like, at this point, we should know far and wide. And so also it's important to note that every Muslim organization and prominent Muslim individual out there has condemned terrorism to no end. CARE actually publishes like a long list of condemnations. A young girl who was in high school.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
A young girl in high school, she just got sick of this, and she took this project upon herself. I think her name is Hera Hashmi. You can find her on Twitter, and she has the spreadsheet link. But she has like hundreds of thousands of instances in an Excel document of condemnations that Muslims have condemned. Yet the question is still asked. And so at what point is it even, I think it's become more of a logical fallacy. You know, it's a device that people use in order to divert from what the real issues are.
I wonder if you have any advice for people who are avid consumers of the news or journalists like me and my colleagues about stereotypes of Muslims that are perpetuated in the news. Do you have any advice for us about how to not perpetuate them?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the sort of line of questioning that we get in the aftermath of these horrific instances is sort of it follows a form when it comes to a lot of the questioning that we receive. Like, sort of this binary and like, okay, do you condemn the attack? And what do we say about this when this happens? So we heard about some care offices getting these types of calls that weren't even in the same geographic area, but they're just looking for a story. Like they're looking for some type of, you know, some type of lead on the story. And so they're asking this question to somebody in Ohio that's completely unrelated to it. Do you condemn this attack? And so that in and of itself is just, it's a trope. And secondly, then the binary, the flip side of it is the Muslim community scared about retribution for in the aftermath of these attacks? So we're always either perpetuated as the perpetrator or the victim, the perpetrator or the victim. And allow us to be, I mean, first of all, we are part of American society. We're we're the most diverse religious community in the U.S. One-third of the American Muslim community is African-American, many of whom whose ancestors were brought here on slave ships. But that's not really what's perpetuated outward.
Also from the Middle East,
I mean, Middle East, like, I mean, you know, we have Middle Eastern, South Asian, white converts. We have a large Latino population here in Phoenix that's Muslim as well. So we're a very diverse community with a very diverse set of viewpoints. So we're not a monolith. We don't think the same. But at the same time, we're human beings. So in the aftermath of a horrific attack, we project ourselves into that situation. What if this was my family? What if this was my house of worship that was attacked? What if I was walking down the street and somebody was barreling down the road in a rental truck or something along those lines? And also, I have to add that the concerns of all Americans are also the concerns of the American Muslim community. So we share the same concerns about gun control. So when we talk about mass shootings and the average of one mass shooting per day that takes place here in this country and the accessibility of guns, that's a concern to the Muslim community. As a matter of fact, our annual banquet was 2 days ago, and there was individuals who were marching outside of our banquet, packing guns and like protesting, protesting our banquet. And so we're also, and it's become the new normal for American Muslims to just have people marching outside your events with guns. At what point does that become a part of the conversation where this shouldn't happen? Yeah, we have the Second Amendment, but when we have an average of one mass shooting per day, why is there not a greater conversation on gun control? Why is it easier to buy an AR-15 assault rifle that is involved in most of these mass shootings versus buying the cartridges that I use to shave my face? That is a real question that we have to ask.
Imran Siddiqui is the executive director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Thank you so much for coming in, Imran.
Thank you for having me.